What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Garden Hotline. That number is 314-436-7900. That's the line to call to get in and ask your question this morning of Erin Goss. She's back. She's with the Shaw Nature Reserve. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning.
Glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
Again, that number is 314-436-7900. There's also an 800 number. You have to dial 1 for that. 1-800-925-1120. Well, I haven't talked to you in a while, but I hear that there's an orchid show coming up.
Yes, there is an orchid show. So the Missouri Botanic Garden is hosting their yearly orchid show. It starts on February 1st and it goes through March 9th. And the admission is part of the garden admission, so there's no extra cost for the orchid show. And this year they're featuring some Missouri orchids in celebration of Shaw Nature Reserve's 100-year anniversary.
It's the 100th anniversary of Shaw Nature Reserve?
100 years, yes.
Did you know it's also the 100th anniversary of KMOX?
That's fantastic.
It's true.
Oh, that's great.
On December 24th, Christmas Eve this year, this radio station will be 100 years old.
Oh, that's so fantastic. And on Christ, you said on Christmas Eve.
That's where the X comes from in KMOX.
I did not know that.
A lot of people don't. But yeah, it was originally going to be called something else, and it was rejected by the FCC. And they started broadcasting the night of December 24th. I believe it was 8 p.m., and I think it was Kirkwood where there was the tower, maybe, James, do you know? Somewhere out there. I think it was in Kirkwood area. There was a tower. That's where it was broadcast from. And it started at 8 p.m. on Christmas Eve. And that's where the X comes from, like Xmas. Mm-hmm. So anyway, back to the Shaw Nature Reserve. Are you doing anything to celebrate the 100th anniversary?
Absolutely. So for the listeners out there, we'll hear more information coming out of the Missouri Botanical Garden. There'll be special highlights in the bulletin. There'll be blogs written specifically about the history and some of the collaborations that the Nature Reserve has been involved with throughout the years. There will also be a few extra events and celebrations. So we'll have tours out at the Nature Reserve along the variety of different areas and just just celebrating the nature reserve as much as possible and getting the word out that we exist, you know, what we do, and how we benefit the community at large.
So in terms of the tours and those things, when do they start?
So they are throughout the year.
Oh, so, okay.
And all of that information is posted on the Missouri Botanical Garden website. So if you if listeners are familiar with how to sign up for classes or look at events, that's where they can go in order to see what's on offer. Also, the class listings and then the bulletin will have announcements as well.
What do you know, and I'm not saying go in depth here, just what do you know in general about the history of the Shaw Nature Reserve since you work there?
Yeah, so the Nature Reserve, the property that it sits on was purchased, I believe it was in the 20s. It was at a time when the botanical garden here in the city was struggling with some of their collections. So specifically, the orchid collection was suffering from the environmental fallout of using a harder coal. So there was lots of pollution in the air and it was affecting their collections. And so they were looking for a place where they could move the botanical garden to make it safer for their collections. And they identified the nature reserve. And so there were plans made to move out there. We have a serpentine wall that was built. We have other infrastructure that the garden started building. And then as there was a change in the type of coal that was used, and so that alleviated some of the environmental issues surrounding the collections, and so the botanical garden decided not to move out to the nature reserve. And so we just became more of a nature reserve as opposed to the location of the botanical garden.
Well, it's great because we have two things now.
Yes, exactly.
Both of them.
Yeah. And it's cool to go out there and see that infrastructure. You can actually see that infrastructure that was built, especially the serpentine wall.
Last year, I enjoyed a few months ago going out to the Shaw Nature Reserve and hiking along the river there. It's fun. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Very quiet. You can find places where there's no other human beings for a while.
Yes,
so that's
kind
of nice.
Yeah, very true. And most people don't visit the nature reserve in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, people don't necessarily think about hiking in the winter, but it's actually a really good time to be out there. It is quieter.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few visitors, so very few people on the trail. And as long as the trail's open, you can look at all sorts of winter behaviors of animals, looking at plant habitats and habits of trees and what they look like in the wintertime. We've seen some really cool animal tracks and activities out there with the snow and the ice. And so it's really kind of fun to go out there and walk around and see what nature is like and experience it in the winter months.
That's a very good tip. You know, I was thinking about the man who the namesake of the Shaw Nature Reserve, and we were talking about 100th anniversary of it. And I was thinking, Henry Shaw, when was he born? He was born in 1800, 225 years ago.
Yeah.
Incredible that he was born in 1800 and his impact on St. Louis is still very much felt today between the Botanical Garden, the Nature Reserve, Tower Grove Park, just on and on.
Yes.
And he lived a long time for a man in that era. He lived till 1889, so he was 89 years old when he passed. Incredible that to this day, his impact is felt by all St. Louisans.
Yes, very true.
Okay, we are going to take your phone calls. Aaron is going to answer your questions this morning. What's on your mind? We're getting, you know, we've still got, it's so cold right now, it's hard to think about planting. But spring is coming, you have to plan ahead. So what kinds of things are you thinking about over the next few weeks as you get ready to get into your garden and your backyard and your front yard? We'll take those phone calls at 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline on a beautiful but chilly Saturday morning. I'm Scott Jagow, along with Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. We're here to take your questions. Aaron will answer them. I will just pass along information, 314-436-7900. What is on your mind this morning when it comes to gardens? We mentioned the Orchid Show is coming up. Very popular event here in St. Louis at the Missouri Botanical Garden. Orchids are simply beautiful flowers. Aaron, tell us a little bit more about them as a species.
Yeah, so there are approximately about 15,000 species of orchids worldwide, which is a pretty large amount. For a species that has such striking and unbelievable flower structures. And not only are the flower structures beautiful, most people are familiar, if they're familiar with orchids, they're familiar with the flowers that are really big and like Georgia O'Keeffe. She is famous for photographing orchids up close, their flowers. But also the way that some of the orchids, the way that they grow, are fairly unique. Some of them are what are called epiphytic, meaning they grow on trees. They grow kind of in the air, and they pull a lot of their nutrients from the air surrounding them and from bark or moss, something that they're growing on. Most of the orchids that we have in Missouri, which we have about 30 species of orchids in Missouri, those are mostly ground-dwelling orchids, and so they grow a lot like normal plants would. They put out some leaves from the soil, and then also they put out their flower structures. Orchids can be difficult to spot, especially Missouri orchids, when you're out and about, but you can see them if you're out hiking in natural areas. My fiancé and I were hiking out in Eggleman Woods, which is a beautiful area to hike in that not very many people go to. And we were hiking. It was like, I want to say it was in August, maybe. We were hiking down the trail, and we saw one of the, they're called spiranthes, and they have strappy leaves and then a spike of flowers that looks a little bit like a liriope flower structure. So if listeners are familiar with liriope, that flower structure, that's a spike. And they're really cool to see if you do see them. Usually they bloom around that time, kind of summertime. We do have some spring blooming orchids here in Missouri, but usually August through September is when they're going to be in bloom.
What's the name of the place you were? Eggleman Woods?
Eggleman Woods, yes.
Where is that?
That is, oh my goodness, where is that? That is in St. Louis County. It is kind of tucked, oh my gosh, I don't remember the exact location, but the parking lot is like, the parking lot's the size, maybe the size of four cars. So yeah,
it's pretty small.
It's very, very small. The trails are pretty rugged. Mm-hmm. They're not well-used trails. And it's a really cool place to go and hike and see varying ecosystems. So they have uplands, they have lowlands. You can see how the trees change. And then they do have orchids on site, as well as some other specialized plants. And just a reminder out there to listeners, please never, ever, ever dig a plant from a natural environment. That is a big no-no, and people can get in a lot of trouble, including some pretty large fines for collecting in the wild.
I would hope so.
Yes.
But Eggleman Woods, I looked it up. It's near St. Albans.
Okay, that sounds right.
On Highway 7.
There we go. Yep.
What was I going to say? Oh, yes. So I was looking up orchids myself just so I could see some pictures of orchids because they're so beautiful to look at. It says that they are found in almost every habitat on Earth except glaciers. And the richest diversity of orchids are in the tropics.
Yes. So, yes.
But 15,000 different. That's amazing.
15,000 different species.
And we have 30 in Missouri.
We have 30, yes.
So the show is coming up at the Missouri Botanical Garden. That starts on February 1st and goes through mid-March?
Yes, I believe it was March 9th.
Okay. You also told me that you have some ideas for winter reeds.
Yes.
As in R-E-A-D-S.
Yes. So one of my favorite things to do in the winter is to to build a roaring fire in our fireplace, curl up on the couch, and read a good book. And so I wanted to share with the readers a few winter reads that are garden specific. The first one that I'd love to share with you all is called Soil, and it's by Camille Dungy. I believe that's how you pronounce her name, but forgive me if I've mispronounced it. It is a memoir about Miss Dungy revitalizing her mother's garden. And so it's the story about her reconnecting with the land and her also reconnecting with her own roots. And it's also this told, she is an African-American woman, and so it gives a different vantage point than some of the other memoirs out there that most of the memoirs that are written specifically with related to gardening are written by most white folks. And so having an African-American's perspective is quite refreshing. And it's a beautifully written book, beautiful, beautiful book. Another one that I'd love to talk about is actually a history book, and it's about Napoleon. And it tells the story of Napoleon through his gardens. Most people don't know that Napoleon was an avid gardener, and gardening was very important to him. And so if listeners are interested in reading about Napoleon's life and also learning about the different types of gardens and how people viewed gardens in the 1800s and during the Napoleonic period, it is a really great read. It's called Napoleon, A Life in Gardens and Shadows by Ruth Sker. And Ruth Sker is a renowned historian. She's, I believe she's British, and she has a very approachable style. It's not dry at all, and she's a wonderful storyteller.
All right, there's one more.
Oh, yeah, one more. This is another kind of history book. It's called Orwell's Roses, and it's by Rebecca Solnit. Mm-hmm. And it tells the story of Orwell's life. So George Orwell, who wrote 1984 mm-hmm. and Animal Farm, was also an avid gardener. And so he was very interested in roses. And so for listeners who are interested in roses, but also learning more about Orwell's life and the type of gardening that he engaged in, Orwell's Roses by Rebecca Solnit is a really fascinating read.
So we have three recommendations right now. Maybe we'll have some more later in the show. But right now we have Soil, and then there's Napoleon, A Life in Gardens and Shadows, and Orwell's Roses.
Yes.
Three books that are appropriate for reading about gardening in the wintertime.
Yes, exactly.
The number to call to ask your question, we are at your service this morning with Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve, 314-436-7900. That's the garden hotline. Aaron, just remind us, since you've been on before, a little bit about your background.
Sure. Thank you for asking. So my background, I graduated from St. Louis Community College with an Associate's in Applied Science in Horticulture. And I worked for about 6 years for a small boutique design build firm with alongside Michelle Reeser-West, who's been a guest on
the show. Yes, she was on last week.
Yeah.
By the way, we have to get you on together.
I would love that. That would be fantastic.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. And while I was at this boutique firm, I had the privilege of engaging in a wide variety of gardening activities. I worked in maintenance. We called it curation. So garden maintenance, you know, taking care of gardens. I've installed gardens. I laid pathways. And then I've engaged in a lot of design. So my specialty is in designing gardens. And so I was the designer for them for many years. And then I've also worked with Bring Conservation Home, which is a program through St. Louis Audubon Society, and they are an organization that Bring Conservation Home is a program that encourages homeowners to plant more native plants and also engage in more wildlife-friendly habitat practices. And so a lot of consultations and talking with homeowners about their spaces and helping them determine what they would like to do with their garden spaces.
That is Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. She is here to answer your questions I would like to talk a little bit more about designing gardens, maybe get some insight from you about that.
Sure.
We'll do that after we take a short break. And again, it's a chance for you to call in 314-436-7900 to ask your questions of Aaron this morning on the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline on St. Louis's station that's turning 100 this year, KMOX. Aaron Goss is with the Shaw Nature Reserve. She's been here before. She is back to answer your questions because we are at your service. 314-436-7900 is the number to call to ask your question. We've been talking about the Orchid Show, which is coming up February 1st at the Missouri Botanical Garden. We gave some recommendations for winter reads, books that have a gardening theme that are interesting, and we'll have some more maybe later on in the show. And Erin was talking about her background in designing gardens. So, Erin, what would you say is your overarching philosophy about designing a garden?
So my overall philosophy about designing a garden is twofold. The one is right plant, right place. That's really number one, making sure that the plants that you're planting in the ground match the conditions that you have in your garden. One of the most difficult things that you can try to do is to plant a plant that, say, likes a lot of moisture in an area that where you don't have a lot of natural moisture, because then it's all about irrigation, and that costs more, it's higher in maintenance, and usually leads to proliferation of weeds. So that's right plant, right place is my number one guiding philosophy. And number two is maintenance. Being 100% sure that the space that is being designed can be properly maintained with the skill level, but also the time that the gardener has. So it can be very demoralizing to design a beautiful garden and have it go in the ground, and the first like 6 months it's stunning.
Mm-hmm.
But then over time, if the gardener is unable to manage that space for whatever reason, due to knowledge level or time, then that garden starts to deteriorate, and it starts to deteriorate pretty quickly. And then all that hard work and all that money that went into designing and installing that garden is just kind of poof.
Yeah.
And it becomes all about, well, now it's you're catching up. You're trying to get that space back to what it was, or it's all about damage control. And, you know, one of the things that I found in horticulture is it's much, much easier to handle a garden if there's some preemptive strategies put in place, and you're not putting out fires all the time, and you're not reacting to something.
Yeah, Michelle and I talked a little bit about this last week because mm-hmm. she's in the landscaping business, and she was saying how it makes her cringe when she's mm-hmm. driving along and she sees a yard that she put together mm-hmm. and then it's months later and it's in disrepair. Yes. But it still has like pointer landscaping yes. sign out front.
Yes.
So I mean, it is a concern if you do that, that, you know, people paid for it, I guess they can do whatever they want with it. Yep. But at the same time, it has your name on it. And
correct.
It's not that you didn't do a great job putting it together. It's just that people didn't take care of it in the proper way.
Correct.
And it reflects on the company, even though that's not fair.
Yes, that's very, very true. And it also reflects sometimes on plants themselves. So one of the things we run into a lot in native plant gardening is that natives have gotten the rap for being low maintenance. But native plants are plants. They still require maintenance. Especially if you're looking for a formal garden, there's a lot more maintenance that goes into that style of garden than there is to just put in a prairie. There is still maintenance if there's a prairie, but when gardens aren't taken care of, so native plant gardens, then a lot of times they turn into weedy messes, and then people say, "Oh, natives are weedy, natives are messy," and it's like they can be, most definitely. But with proper management, a lot of times those native gardens can look a lot like non-native gardens. They're not inherently messy.
Erin Goss, she's with the Shaw Nature Reserve, and she is taking your questions this morning on the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. Linda, you're on the Garden Hotline this morning.
Hi. Erin, I have a question about natives that we would like to purchase and plant at a garden that we established. It's a garden club. We established this garden at Cliff Cave County Park. And we are looking specifically for some natives that would be, I guess, like deer tolerant. We haven't really had a problem because I've been using Irish Spring soap on things, but this park is loaded with deer. So we're looking specifically for like some red, white, and blue to have, you know, like a patriotic theme, or just, and then some other ones that you would recommend that, I know they're not really all that low maintenance, but just ones that would do well. We're having a situation where a lot of us are older ladies, and there is, you know, a pump down in the park where we can get water, but we're having to haul the water, you know, from that pump over to the garden, which it would take probably about 3 hoses to get it over there. So we want some things, too, that maybe are a little drought tolerant, too, that we don't have to do so much watering.
Yeah, that's thank you for asking this question. So in terms of deer tolerance, that's a difficult situation. So a lot of times herds of deer will behave each herd of deer will behave differently. And so it's all about just letting them do their thing and figuring out what the herd of deer that you have in that area is eating or not eating. That's not the best answer there, but it is experimental, but I will tell you that in general, most deer and rabbits do not like plants that have aromas or are hairy or have some sort of heavy texture to them. So we have native mints. They're called mountain mints. And so there's one called Slender Mountain Mint. That's a good one to plant, any of the mountain mints, because deer typically do not eat on them. They won't eat them all the way down to the ground. They may nibble a little bit, but they're not going to totally destroy those plants. Those bloom white.
Okay. Yep. Is there something real invasive like regular mint that you don't want to plant like in the ground? You want to plant in pots?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Our mountain mints are not as aggressive as culinary mints. Okay. However, there are a few mountain mints that are a little more aggressive than others. So Slender Mountain Mint is one that's fairly well behaved. It may reseed a little bit, but it's not going to spread around like something like peppermint or chocolate mint. It's not going to behave like that. And then some other considerations for your red blooming and drought tolerant plant, a look at Royal Catchfly. Royal Catchfly blooms, it blooms red. It is slightly sticky. And so a lot of times deer will leave them alone. It is also very, very drought tolerant. Blues are going to be a little bit trickier, but you can look at a plant like Blue Sage. A blue sage is also aromatic. It is in the mint family. It will reseed a little bit, but it's one of those plants. It doesn't get really big. It grows tall, kind of in a spike, and it can be cut back to control its habit.
And would you recommend a source of these plants too, like a nursery or even a, you know, like a online one that, like where does Shaw Nature Reserve? We've been there and seen that area. It's really nice. Where do you obtain these plants?
So, good places to obtain plants would be plant sales. So, Shaw Nature Reserve has a spring plant sale and a fall plant sale. I believe this year's spring plant sale is the weekend of the 3rd and 4th. Nope, sorry, 2nd and 3rd. It's a Friday and a Saturday in May. And we have a lot of different plant vendors. If you're looking to If you're looking for an online source, I would check out Missouri Wildflowers Nursery. They are one of the largest nurseries in Missouri, and they also have a list on their website of all of the plant sales they go to. And so that's a good way to also see what plant sales are going on. And then there are a couple other smaller nurseries around, and those you can access or learn more about if you go to Grow Native's resource guide. Their resource guide will list not only plant sales, but also plant vendors where you can, the plant growers where you can purchase plants.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Linda. It's 314-436-7900, and Kathy, good morning. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Kathy.
I appreciate being able to call in. I live in Florida, and I stream KMOX almost every day, so I'm really appreciative for that. And you're coming through fine. You're coming through real clearly. So I have had an orchid in a pot in my house for the past 2 years. It hasn't bloomed in the last year. The leaves are quite healthy. How can I help it bloom again?
Yeah, so what if the leaves are healthy, that's a really good sign. A lot of times orchids will only bloom once a year. What kind of conditions? Is it growing in a window?
I have it underneath a solar light in my dining room.
Okay.
On the table.
Okay. So there are some orchids that prefer a little lower light situations or indirect light, and some orchids that prefer a little bit more direct light. So if you know what type of orchid you have, I would do a little internet search if you haven't already and just make sure that the light conditions are correct for that specific orchid. The other thing that you can do is get an orchid fertilizer. So fertilizing orchids like once a year or twice a year can be beneficial and help to promote more blooms. So those are two things that I would suggest, that if you aren't already doing, go ahead and investigate what kind of orchid you have, make sure those light conditions are correct, and then also look into fertilizing it at least once or twice a year. Also be mindful about when you water the orchid. Again, depending on the orchid species, it may or may not want water after it's bloomed. There are some orchid species that don't like water, like a lot of water after it blooms. The other thing is that if an orchid is a tropical orchid and it's more of one of those epiphytic orchids that likes to grow on trees, those orchids grow in very humid conditions. And so if your house is really, really dry, then misting the orchid leaves can be beneficial long-term for the health of the orchid.
Okay. The directions said to put 3 ice cubes on it a week, and I've done that since I've had the plant.
Okay. Well, maybe that's why the leaves are doing so well. Do you remember what time of the year the orchid bloomed last?
In the fall.
In the fall. Okay. But it didn't bloom this past year?
No. No.
Okay.
Nope. I had to go get an artificial orchid at Joann's.
Oh, bummer. Well,
It looks pretty good, actually, but I really would like the real thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is it looks like it needs dirt. I see the green roots, it looks like it's got some kind of a wood, not dirt, but wood pellets or something.
Yep. It's usually a bark-based soil or quote-unquote soil, and those green roots that you're seeing, those are aerial roots, and that is actually how the orchid breathes and takes in moisture as well as and sometimes nutrients. So some orchids do benefit from an up-potting every year or two, so that's another thing you could do is if you see that it's starting to like really crowd itself out, is buy a pot that's just slightly larger, then buy an orchid substrate mix or an orchid soil mix, and then repot it. Don't make the pot so large because most orchids don't want a lot of space in their.
Okay, do I cover the green roots with the orchid soil mix?
I would not. I'd let those green roots sit above the soil level.
Okay. Well, you've really been helpful. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Kathy. It is 314-436-7900. to ask your question of Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Gene will be up next after a short break, so stay tuned.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Mix and match 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries for $2.99 each when you buy three. Take advantage of this exclusive digital deal. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, $3.97 per pound, limit one package. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Be right back. Today we have Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve taking your questions. The number is 314-436-7900. Let's go back to the phones. Gene, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello. I love your show. I listen every week. I have a question similar to the Cliff Cave person. With a twist, I have several beds in my yard, and I had a bed of hibiscus, and they were about 6 feet tall, and there were about 6 plants, and the deer left it alone, and it bloomed beautifully. Well, I put in another bed opposite that. In the other side of the garden, and there were 4 new hibiscus, small ones, and the deer would not leave them alone. I had to cover them with the chicken wire, and that was the only way to save them. Otherwise, they would have eaten them to the ground. Now, just near that is an herb garden, and they left that alone, which is unusual. But in addition to the deer, I have many rabbits. And so I know it was the rabbits and the deer because I saw it. Mm. So I heard your answer, but these are hibiscus. I really don't want to get rid of them. They're gorgeous. So I don't know if you have What is your answer?
Yeah, please don't get rid of those hibiscus. And one of the things that deer love the most is new succulent growth on plants.
And oh, so, yes, I figured that.
Yes.
Because they're young and beautifully, yes. The leaves and so forth were yummy, I could
yes.
tell.
Yes.
So that's why I covered them with chicken wire. But it's going to be a while before they reach, you know, is mm-hmm. that why they didn't eat the other ones? I couldn't yes. figure it out with the deer. Now, the rabbits, they couldn't reach it on their hind legs. Yeah. But the deer could, and they left them alone.
Yeah, I think you've stumbled upon an issue that a lot of people deal with. A deer will leave older plants alone because a lot of times the older plants have a woodier nature to their stems.
That's
and so
it.
It's that new growth, that new succulent growth
yes.
that they love. So unfortunately, your approach is probably what you're going to have to continue doing at least for the next year or two until those plants establish.
Okay.
You also might just, if you're, the other thing about deer are habitual. And so if they find a place that has really yummy
yes.
a really
I know
yummy
that.
Food source, they're going to come back.
Yes,
and so,
and they do.
Yes, so you will need to protect those young plants. And then the other thing is that when the hibiscus, the older hibiscus, the more mature hibiscus, as they start to emerge from the ground later in the spring, just watch them because the deer might start nibbling on those too. Just watch. It's not a guarantee, but that new growth, they might go after. So if you have a heavy deer pressure, providing some protection at least until those plants get to be a little bit more mature and they start to harden, those stems start to harden, will work in your favor. It's
okay,
not pretty to look at, but it is
yeah.
it is a solution.
I do want to add something about the deer. I have a beautiful peace rose, and I actually brought it with us from Texas because we lived in Austin for a while. Anyway, it's gorgeous. It was a gorgeous peace rose. Well, one year I didn't cover it yet when it was leafing out in the mm-hmm. spring, and I didn't cover it. It was covered with buds and that nice new leaf, and the deer came along and ate every one of them. But what happened was, as they had more buds and it had been sort of pruned, the flowers were gorgeous,
mm-hmm.
more gorgeous than they've ever been.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah.
Thanks for the story, Gene, and your questions. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900 is the number to call. If you want to join on the Garden Hotline this morning, Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve will continue with your questions after the top of the hour. Stay tuned to the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Today we have Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve taking your calls at your service. The number is 314-436-7900. We've had some pretty good topics so far. We've talked a little about also about the orchid show that's coming up at the Missouri Botanical Garden. That's on February 1st. It starts then and goes through March 9th. And we've had some book recommendations as well. We might do more of those, but let's get back to the phones. Our next caller on the hotline is Stan. You're up. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for the show. My wife and I have been big fans, and we've listened for many years. I wanted to call in real quick about the lady with the hibiscus. I've had hibiscus for many, many years, and I moved from the city, transplanted, and went out to Jefferson County, where there are tons of deer. And what I have found for the deer, couple of different things. First of all, that mesh that she puts on them that kind of inhibits the growth of the flowers. So I started with that, but then I went to a spray. There is a spray for deer and rabbits, and they really don't like it, and I've had tons of success. They stay away from my hibiscus when I spray them. Something else that I do, she said she has an herb garden. I grow a lot of basil. And I found that the smell, if you rub the basil leaves in your fingers, they have a distinct smell. The rabbits and deer really don't like that. So I grow a lot of basil around also, and I've had real good success with it. So I just wanted to pass that along.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Stan, so much for passing that along. One reminder with that spray, that is something that you do have to usually apply, especially after it rains. So if Gene does decide to use that spray, just make sure to read the directions and reapply that spray as directed. But yeah, thank you so much, Stan. That was great.
Good tip. 314-436-7900. Cindy, you're up next on the Garden Hotline with Aaron.
Hi, good morning. Thanks to all the substitute hosts, first of all. We miss Mike Miller, but all the substitutes have just been doing great. I'm calling, too. I'm involved with a garden in Shrewsbury that gets a lot of deer pressure. We've been through a number of supposedly deer-resistant plants. We've had the best luck with any of the carexes. They're not colorful, of course, but like the Pennsylvania sedge. We've also, for color, we've used the agasaki, some of the hyssops. Of course, the sages, like the Walker's Low. So, it's a lot of trial and error. And hopefully the deer don't win. As an annual, though, for color, it would require a little watering for the Cliff Cave Garden. But we've had good luck with lantanas. Mm. They haven't bothered our lantanas, so we keep a small patch of lantana just to try to create some color interest.
Yeah, thank you so much, Cindy. You're spot on. Deer are not a fan of lantana, so that's a good companion plant sometimes. That is a non-native, but it is a good companion annual because the deer definitely do not like them. And thank you for bringing up carexes. Those are also known as sedges. Those are like grass-like plants, and they make great ground cover, and you're absolutely right. Most deer do not usually bother grasses, so thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Cindy. Again, the hotline number is 314-436-7900. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is here to answer your questions. We were talking earlier about designing gardens, and I didn't know if you got through your list of things. I wrote them down. I'm very vigilant. Right plant, right place is number one.
Yeah.
Maintenance. So knowing if you have the time and the skill level to maintain a garden. Mm-hmm. Is there a third one?
You know, two more things that actually tie into those. And that is to set your expectations at a reasonable level. So some people get really, really excited when they start designing a garden and they want to design their entire yard. And that unless you have the time and the expertise, that can be really challenging. So I always suggest that people start small. You can always design the garden on paper or in your head and then just install parts of it at a time, phase it out. So put in a small section of it, see how it goes, see how you feel, how the maintenance is going, and then the next year or the next or later in the season, move to the next phase, move to another small area and install that. The other thing is with the right plant, right place is you need to know your landscape. So if you've not spent a lot of time out in your garden, I encourage you to start now. Spend some time looking at how the water flows through your garden, whether or not you have microclimates. And what I mean by a microclimate is if you say you have a short wall and there's a space on the other side of that short wall that's super shady, that usually is going to be a colder pocket. And so you can grow plants in that area that maybe are a little more sensitive to some of our humidity and our heat in the summer, and that's where you can grow that plant. So really get to know your landscape, get to know what's going on, and then you can start matching the plants that you have that you're interested in with the space that you actually are going to be growing in.
Well, we talked also earlier about the 100th anniversary of the Shaw Nature Reserve, the same year that KMOX is turning 100. Can you go over some of the things, because that was an hour ago, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that tuned in since then. Can you go over some of the things that you'll be doing to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Shaw Nature Reserve?
Yes, so we are still finalizing some of the events, but there will be additional tours of the Nature Reserve offered throughout the year. There'll be specialized tours to look at different bloom times, different trails, the actual history of the gardens, the history of the Nature Reserve. We'll also have tours around the Bascom House, which is a historic building that's on site. And so there'll be tours of the Bascom House. There will be articles in the Missouri Botanical Garden Bulletin about the history, as well as some of the conservation efforts in the Nature Reserve. For those of you who purchased a Missouri Botanical Garden calendar, which are absolutely gorgeous, those wall calendars, there's a special insert about Shaw Nature Reserve and specifically about Missouri orchids. And then at the orchid show, there's a highlighting of Missouri orchids, and there will be some classes and extra educational opportunities surrounding Missouri orchids.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
A lot of things going on at the Shaw Nature Reserve. Erin Goss has been kind enough to give some of her time to answer your questions. The number to call and ask yours is 314-436-7900. It's the Garden Hotline, at your service, on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Cloudy, chilly Saturday afternoon in January. We have, or Saturday morning, rather. It'll be afternoon at some point. Erin Goss is here from the Shaw Nature Reserve to answer your questions. The number is 314-436-7900. We are at your service, and we've had some really interesting topics so far. And of course, we've also talked about the orchid show coming up at the Missouri Botanical Garden. We've talked about designing gardens, invasive species to some extent, although we didn't get to the winter creeper yet. I wanted to ask you about that.
So winter creeper is a plant that is pretty common in people's gardens. It was sold for a very long time as a ground cover. It is, for those of you not familiar with it, it is a very low growing, very deep dark green with lustrous green leaves. And it, when it's grown as a ground cover, it does its job very, very well. But what happens is it's a lot like poison ivy and English ivy. When it encounters a tree or something vertical, it wants to grow up it. It's technically a vine. And so it grows up the tree. And over time, what it does is it strangles those trees. And so when you drive around the city or even you drive around or you walk around some of the natural areas, you may encounter trees that have these very large vines that when you look up at that are growing up the trunk, and then when you look up into the canopy, it's like there's just these very dark green leaves, and it doesn't look like what it's supposed to look like. The tree does not look like it's what it's supposed to look like. And that's the winter creeper. And it produces very vibrant orangish red berries that are very attractive to birds. And birds will eat these berries and then they will poop them out into natural areas. And then we end up having winter creeper will overrun some of our natural areas. And so it's become very, very problematic. And so it's one of those plants that's not sold as often in the trade, and we would like to see it never sold in the trade because it is one of those plants it's really hard to control. Once you have it, it's hard to get rid of it, and it is causing some pretty bad damage out in our natural areas.
And what do you do about it?
So there are ways that you can deal with it. If it is growing as a ground cover and it's something that you like to have, making sure that it stays a ground cover and never goes vertical is key to controlling its spread. If you have it as a ground cover and you don't want it anymore, which great, I highly, I support that. Easiest method to get rid of it is wait like a day or two after a rainy day where the ground is nice and moist and then you start pulling the vines. And you can pull those vines straight out of the ground. They're pretty easy to pull. It does take a little bit of muscle because Normally you'll find a winter creeper growing in very large patches, but pulling it right after rain is highly effective. You can also use herbicide. That's another method that can be used. If it's growing vertically up a tree, best thing to do is right at the ground level where the tree meets the soil level and where the vine meets the soil level, you take like loppers or a tree saw or a folding saw and cut about a 6-inch bit out of the vine stem. And that'll create about a 6-inch gap where then the top part of the vine will start to die back. It's unsightly. It's very unattractive, but that is the best method because you don't want to rip a vine off of a tree because you'll probably pull the bark off with it, and then that also could kill the tree. So creating that 6-inch gap at the very base of that vine can help to alleviate the pressure on that tree.
Good to know. Erin Goss, Shaw Nature Reserve. She's answering your questions too, whatever they might be about the coming spring and planting and creating your garden, landscaping, all of it. 314-436-7900 is the number to call. And Fred, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a smoke tree in the yard, in the front yard. It's quite old. It's about 12, 13 years old, and it is really overgrown. But it's healthy. I don't want to get rid of it. It has beautiful leaves in the early spring, and then all through the summer, it's really attractive. But it's turned more into a bush, a giant bush, than an actual tree. I do want to cut it back, but I don't want to kill it, and I don't know when to cut it back. So can you give me some advice on that?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad you have a smoke tree. Those are one of the most beautiful trees that we have. So with smoke trees, what you can do is it blooms on new wood. And so the prime time to prune is really, you can start now, but you can also wait till February, March and start and prune it. So February is a really good time to prune any kind of shrub or tree that blooms on new wood. And so I would go in and start pruning on it, but only prune a third of the tree back at a time. So go in and prune about a third of the tree back. You can start now or you can wait until February and then wait a growing season and then go in and take back another third of that plant until you get the shape and the form that you were looking for. That's called a rejuvenation cut. There are some guidelines online if you want visuals. If you do an internet search for rejuvenation pruning, it will bring up some visuals that will help you guide you through that process if you are a visual person. But again, only take a third of a plant at a time. It blooms on new wood, so go ahead and start pruning it now, but best in February, and then go from there.
All right. Well, that's very helpful. So when would be the second time I would prune it? Once in February, and then?
Wait until next year and prune it again. Oh. Yeah.
So, next year. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So it does take a few years in order to train a tree to be what you want. The other thing is that since it is such a mature plant, taking that time will be better for its overall health. It will take longer for it to depending on its overall health. You just need to take a little bit more extra time, especially with more mature trees.
Okay, now the deer have about semi-destroyed it. Mm-hmm. You know, a deer, a male, a buck mm-hmm. has come and rubbed his antlers on the branches and taken out part of the tree, unfortunately.
Okay.
So what can I do about the deer?
Okay, so the first thing you want to do is have you cleaned up the damage from the deer? So what I mean is, if there's broken branches, have you pruned those broken branches yet?
No.
Okay, so the first thing to do is go in and prune back those broken branches. Any broken mm-hmm. branches are going to, if you leave those, they will potentially leave the tree open for disease. So that's mm-hmm. the first thing, is prune back those broken branches. And then the second thing is going to be put some protection around the tree. And you don't have to do it the entire year. I believe, rubbing usually takes place, it's like August, maybe through October. So you don't have to worry too much about it in the spring. But once late summer and fall start, put up some protections. You can use rebar. And then some construction fencing. You can use rebar and some metal fencing. But the rebar, if you place it so that if it's tall enough and you place it, the bars close enough that the deer just can't even get to the tree, that will help alleviate some of that rubbing. I believe there are some products out there that you could also use, but a lot of those products you do have to reapply if it rains.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. You've been very helpful.
Oh, you're welcome, Fred. Thank you so much for calling.
Thanks for the call, Fred. Yeah, we've had some really good questions today, and you've provided some very good answers. That's what we're here for. It is 314-436-7900. Aaron Goss from the Missouri Botanical Garden. Up next, we have Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Hi, Aaron. Thanks for sitting in today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Hey, I got a couple questions for you. So when would be a good time to order the, I call them little sprouts of trees from the conservation website?
So that you want to do now. So they open their ordering in September, and there are a lot of people who get on the first day that ordering is available, and they order. And so if you can go on to the Missouri Department of Conservation's website and go ahead and place your order now, you probably will not, depending on what you're looking for, they may be sold out, but you can be put on a wait list. And then you can choose when they ship the seedlings to you.
Okay.
Depending on your needs. They'll start shipping, I want to say it's like mid-March, and then I think they end in late April.
Okay. I just was worried maybe they were going to start sending them now, and I'm like, because I did it last year, and they came, fairly quickly. Okay, well, that's good to know. The second thing is when is a good time for me to move my rose bushes?
So you want to move the rose bushes whenever they are dormant, and they're so you can do that in, usually roses are dormant, well, now. So as long as the ground's not frozen, you can pick the rose, you can dig out the rose and move it. Just make sure the ground's not frozen and make sure you get enough of that root ball to move that plant. So I usually go out at least a foot from the base of the shrub or a rose, maybe a foot and a half, and then go ahead and dig the root ball out and move it that way. There are differing opinions on whether or not you should root prune. I don't root prune. I think that just digging that shrub out is going to prune the roots on its own. But then you also might consider going ahead and pruning that rose back to decrease some of the stress on the root.
So prune it back before you move it.
I apologize. You can prune it back before you move it if you'd like, or you can also prune it once you transplant it.
Okay, and do you recommend the root stimulator when you're putting it in there? Or what would you put in the hole?
I've used root stimulator in the past, and I'm not exactly sure how well it works. I've moved roses without root stimulator, and I've moved them with root stimulator. The key is going to be making sure that once you move that rose, that you do give it a little bit of extra water to encourage the root growth and to encourage it to adapt to its new space. So keeping it watered, as well as the herbivores away from it, so the rabbits and the deer, so provide it some protection from being eaten onto.
How often do you need to water it? Like, let's say you put it in February when it's, you know, do you need to kind of check and see if we're going to get snow or rain or, you know, what's your recommendation?
Yeah, so I would water it immediately upon transplanting, and then make sure to water it about once a week, unless we're getting a lot of natural precipitation. And you can actually...
And how long would you do that for?
I would do that at least for the first 3 months. Just make sure that it has a little bit of extra water. And I apologize. Okay. I would not move it right now. Now that I think about it, I'd probably wait until late February and into March. So when we have a little bit more warmer temperatures, and so that there's not another freeze, ground freeze.
Yeah, I was I was worried about the soil being not frozen.
Yes,
you know, and whatever. So basically, maybe first of March would probably be a good time.
Yeah, sometime in March when we know that the soils aren't going to freeze anymore, and then we do have the outlook of warmer temperatures on the horizon.
Okay. One thing I'll throw out there about the deer is I use a product called Bobex, B-O-B-E-X. It's a very good product, but you do have to, you know, put it down if it rains. I heard you mention to the other gentleman that about the deer rubbing, but the Bobex does work very well. It's kind of stinky, but it does work. So anyway, well, listen, I really appreciate your time and all of your answers for me today. Thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend.
You too, Tom. Thanks for calling in. The number is 314-436-7900. We have a couple people on the line, and there are some open lines, so we only have one or two more segments left in the show. If you have a question, now's the time to get in. 314-436-7900. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve answering your questions this morning on the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, along with Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. She's answering your questions this morning. A reminder that coming up at 10 o'clock, we have the winter warm-up. Yes, it's that time. It's Cardinals winter warm-up today for more than 3 hours with Matt Pauley from Ballpark Village. Then we have Billikens basketball, Chiefs football, and then Lions Commanders later on tonight. So a full day of sports on KMOX. But in the next 20 minutes, we have time for a few more questions about gardening and landscaping, etc. And we're going to go back to the phones. The number is 314-436-7900. Marie, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I have a question about my purple coneflowers. I have a bed of coneflowers that I've had since 2012. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I noticed that I was getting the little coneflower mites. Mm. So when I saw those, I just yanked out the whole plant. Yeah. And for a couple of years afterwards, I had no more problems. But this past year, I've been away a lot, taking care of a family member, and things just kind of went crazy. I got coneflower mites. I had yellow asters. I had, you know, a lot of misshapen flower heads. And I'm just wondering. I mean, I tried to keep up with it, but I really, it just got a little bit out of hand. So I'm wondering this year in the spring before everything gets started, if there's some things I can do to prevent all of that.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry to hear that you've had the mites and yellow, asters yellow. Those are really tough to find in your garden. And unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do about it except for remove the plant material like you've been doing. One thing that you can do in order to help the garden space is make sure to go in and clean up all debris. So in general, I encourage people to leave their seed heads, to leave the plants up throughout the year. But with the asters yellow, with the mites, it can overwinter. So removing the plants and removing the debris around the plants might help in the future. But if you already have asters yellow, it's going to be really tough to keep that garden bed clean from future infestations. But first thing, remove all of the debris, including all of the debris that's on the ground, and see what happens next year. And I would say if you see more of the misshapen flowers, that just might be an area where you can't plant coneflowers anymore. And I hate to say that, but that's kind of the reality of asters yellow.
Okay, so then I do leave the old seed heads up. I mean, you know, I leave them for the finches and stuff. So this spring, so just are on a warm day, just take all of that out, clear all of that out, and then just see what happens in the spring.
That's what I do this year. Remove all of that debris. So take all those plants down, and then again, what's on the ground, make sure you take that as well. So sometimes the leaves and parts of the plants can fall into the soil. Just go ahead and take those out, and then see what happens this year. And again, if you have a lot of misshapen flower heads, maybe revisit the design of the space and consider putting different plants in.
Okay. I can do that.
Sounds good. Thanks, Marie, for calling in. 314-436-7900 is the garden hotline. Up next, we have Doug. Good morning, Doug.
Yeah, we have plants that we winter over in the garage, hibiscus and everything out. They're big enough to where I have to use a two-wheel dolly. Mm. And I have a retaining wall, and it is an elevated area. And when I first put it out, I put real heavy cardboard underneath, and then I filled it with rock. I use horticultural vinegar to spray some of that stuff, but it's getting out of hand now, and I found horticultural vinegar works on some of that stuff. But is there something better than horticultural vinegar, which is 31% acid? And I also use a product to keep animals away. It's called Bonide. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you've ever heard of that, but you spray that around plants, and it pretty well keeps animals away from that. Am I doing everything right?
So I apologize. I think I've misunderstood the first part. You said that you overwinter a lot of plants in the garage, and then you said you talked about a retaining wall and then cardboard and rock. Cardboard and rock, you're using that to. Could you remind me what you're using that to protect from?
I put the real heavy cardboard there. I shaped it to fit around the wall, and then I covered it with about 3 inches of heavy rock, big rock, not gravel, but bigger rock. And I still have weeds coming up, and I'm wanting to make sure I don't do it.
I see. So you're trying to stymie the wheat growth. I apologize about that. So usually cardboard is a really good deterrent. What it doesn't do is it doesn't always butt up well to structures. So you probably are going to get some more of that weed growth where the cardboard meets the retaining wall. The other thing that you might find is if that's been down on the in the ground for quite a while, you probably are getting reed growth in the rock itself. And so that's where, you know, your horticultural oil would help, or your vinegar would help. You can also use like an herbicide that would help. And then you can also use pre-emergent. So to keep seeds from germinating in that rock, you can put down some pre-emergent herbicide, and that would help deter any kind of seeds from germinating.
Most of it's growing up around the edges, mm-hmm. and that's where I'm. Yep. That's where I'm in the herbicide,
the vinegar. Yeah, and that's. You're probably always going to have a little bit of weed growth around that retaining wall and where that cardboard meets. That's just, you know, there's not a lot you can do except sometimes people will fold up the cardboard and push that up against a structure and then put the rock. And so there's kind of a little extra flap of cardboard, but it is a little unsightly. It's not the prettiest thing in the world. So you'll probably just have to keep on pulling or spraying. Horticultural vinegar is a great usage, especially if you have a small section. But again, you might look at some pre-emergence to help control some of that germination.
Yeah, we're in an area where we have fox and rabbits and squirrels and around. I found that the Bonide product that mm-hmm. you can buy a lot of the horticultural stores, I found that pretty well keeps the animals away from those plants.
Oh, that's super. Yeah, I'll have to look up the Bonide. I've heard of the brand, but I'm not familiar with the formula to keep away creatures. So I'll take a look at that. But thank you very much for sharing.
Thanks for the call, Doug. We appreciate it. We are going to continue with your phone calls. We've got one segment left with Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve taking your questions this morning. Let's get back to the phones. Barney, you're up next.
Well, thanks for taking my call this morning. We have a Christmas cactus that we have repotted two or three times. Currently, it's in about a 10-inch pot and must have in excess of 50 blooms on it and grown to about 15, 16 inches across. And I'm afraid we're getting to the point of no return. My question is, how would be the best way to try to get some starters off this plant to start some new plants?
Oh, that's a great question. Christmas cactuses are a lot of fun because, honestly, they are extremely easy to propagate. So one of the things you can do is look on the plant and look at the find one of the sections and go to the very end of one of the you know how they're in segments, and you can just pull that segment apart. So take two segments that are joined, be very careful and kind of maybe twist it just a little bit right at that segment and try to break it cleanly. And then those two segments should pull apart fairly easily. And then you can take that segment, let it sit for a couple of days. And what's going to happen is where you broke those segments in half, it's going to produce a callus. And let it callus over, and then you can take that segment and stick it in soil, and it'll start growing. It'll take a little bit for it to put on new roots, but it's extremely easy to propagate a Christmas cactus. So just break the little segments apart as cleanly as possible, let the segment sit for a couple days to callus over, and then stick it in the soil.
That sounds great. This thing has just gone crazy this year with all these. Evidently, everything's fit just right with the amount of sunshine and the amount of water we're getting it. It's okay. Well, thanks. We'll give that a try, and hopefully we can pass this on to some other members of the family.
That sounds great.
Thanks for your question, Barney. Up next, let's go to Robert. Robert, you're on the Garden Hotline with Aaron. Hello, Robert.
Hello. Hello, hello.
You're up next.
Great. I have two questions. One,
I back up to a woods. I want to plant. I've got some mushroom, morel seed stuff, spores. What time should I plant them? Number two, I have a large shady area. What flowering plants can I plant in that for spring?
Yeah, so I love that question about the morels, but unfortunately I cannot answer that. I do not know the timing on when to plant morels. So there's a lot of information on the internet about it. There are some specialized mushroom spore companies that you can look to for guidance, and that's what I would suggest. Unfortunately, I do not have an answer there for you. As far as the large shady area and some spring blooming plants, definitely look for some Missouri bluebells. Missouri bluebells are, it's a little bit like a bulb, but they bloom super duper early, and they vary in blooms from pink to blue to purple, and they are gorgeous. So Missouri bluebells. Also look for a plant called woodland poppy or celandine poppy that blooms a yellow, and it will form a ground cover over time. It's very beautiful. You can also look at other spring bloomers like... there's one called roundleaf groundsel that also blooms yellow, and that's going to also form a ground cover, and it blooms usually in April and May, kind of a yellow daisies, and then when you cut it back, it forms a really nice, very evergreen ground cover. And then the last one that I'll suggest is one called woodland phlox. Woodland phlox blooms blue, and it is just your typical phlox flower. It's really low growing, very beautiful. After it blooms, cut it back to about 6 inches, and then that'll rejuvenate the plant. But wait till after it blooms, and you'll notice it kind of starts to die back a little bit. Cut it back to about 3 inches, and then it'll flush back out. So, yep, those would be my suggestions.
Good suggestions there. We've got time for one more call. Travis, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Thanks for the call. My question is, we have a row or a screen of viburnum, about 5 viburnum plants. That's been really beautiful, but over time, it runs east to west, and the east plants get more sun than the west plants. Mm-hmm. So the foliage now isn't even across. And mm-hmm. So... my plan was to, you know, closer towards spring, maybe February, cut back some the east plants to get more sun to the west plants. But then I was wondering if there was something I could do with the west plants to stimulate them, like any kind of fertilizer or anything like that, or if you have any other tips.
So are you, do you have leatherleaf viburnums?
I think I'd have to double check what they were, because they were planted about 8 years ago. So I don't think it's leatherleaf though.
Okay. So your plan sounds very reasonable. Anytime you can open up a plant to get more sun, that's definitely going to be helpful. I would try that this first year and then see what happens.
All right, that's going to have to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Aaron Goss, Shaw Nature Reserve. Check out the Orchid Show at the Missouri Botanical Garden coming up February 1st. Thanks so much. We'll have you back again.
Oh, excellent. Love to come back.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to the Voice of St. Louis.